In the episode Doppelgangers, April hopes which former NBA star will throw a basketball at Tennifer's head. Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record, speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Local Calzone. Zone.
And you can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis!
Hello, hello! Welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. This is episode number 112, being recorded Sunday, March 24th, 2024. And today, I'm going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 10, Citizen Nope. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. And just a reminder that this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. So what's going on? How's everyone doing? Man, I gotta tell you, I ate way too much this weekend. Kind of had a busy weekend. On Friday night, Joni and I took the girls out with some of my older daughter Sadie's friends, and for her birthday, so we went out to we had ramen. We went to a fancy ramen noodles place. Sadie loves ramen, so I got this huge bowl. I mean, it was just it was classic ramen. I don't even know what the meat was. I think it was pork actually. But it was a ton. I didn't even finish it because we had appetizers and stuff too. And then after that, we went out and got ice cream. and then last night, Joni made a charcuterie. I'm just kidding. Trying to be funny. It's failing. Charcuterie board. And I ate way too much fucking cheese last night. I was ailing for a while. I was in a cheese coma. It was good. There's this... It's like a Merlot cheese. I don't even know, it's so damn good, though. They saw it at Costco. I don't think that's where she got this one from, but that's the first time I tried it, one of the sample stations. But, oh, good stuff. But, and then, we had a birthday party for Sadie today, so just, tons of food. Oh, my God. But I was just thinking, when I was eating all this cheese last night, it's like, when you think about, how much cheese have I eaten in my entire life? When you think about, there's one human being in this world that has eaten way more cheese, or even just maybe not even way more cheese, but I mean, you say there's one human being in this world that has eaten more cheese than anyone else, it's a weird way to think about it. And it's it makes sense, obviously, but it's so weird. How'd you like to be the guy that could tell everyone I've eaten more mayonnaise than anyone else? I mean, it's is that impressive or is that disgusting? And then, or if you actually bowl testicles or any kind of disgusting food like that. I've never eaten bowl testicles, so if they're delicious, my bad, but whatever. But I mean, to be the guy to say yep, I've eaten more bowl testicles than anyone. I imagine though there'd be some food that would be pretty cool. If you had eaten the most pizza or something, or if you're just like nacho cheese, hell yeah, people would be all right, cool, man. If it's nacho cheese and you've eaten the most, that's badass. But if it's any other kind of cheese, that's pretty lame. So, let's move on. St. Baldrick's. We did it. We did it. I raised over $400 thanks to, some of you who listen to the show, most specifically Jamie and Robbie, my sister-in-laws, thank you guys so much. You guys helped me actually get over my, my goal was 250 and I got to 404, I think is where I ended. So yeah, thank you so much for everyone even seeing that I was over and then just helping. Because again, this money is not going to me. It made me feel a little better that there was more money in there. And I didn't want to not hit my goal, but, yeah, Jamie and Robbie, Sasha over at Flips and Bumps. I mean, especially for promoting it on the Flips and Bumps page. And then also, you donating as well, man, it meant a lot. And Sasha actually posted on the Flips and Bumps stories section. He posted a picture of me doing it. And then St. Baldrick's actually used that picture. So I was actually on their Instagram for a day or whatever. So that was pretty awesome. So thanks again, Sasha. And also big thank yous to Celia Hafner, L from Melmac, PhD, my mom. I'm trying to think who else listens, or my parents. I shouldn't just say my mom, but I'm trying to think of who else listens to this show. Probably not anyone else who donated, but thank you guys so much. The school actually raised over $17,000. So I'm very proud of all of us. So yeah, got my head shaved. I did put the pictures on Instagram. I've been saying that a lot lately, Graham. Put them on Instagram the other day, and it was only up for a day. So I don't know if you really want to see what I looked like with a shaved head, I guess message me and I'll send you a picture. Otherwise, probably doesn't matter because it'll grow back. My hair grows fast. It'll grow back in like a month. So yeah. And speaking of which, like, it was nice going into work the next day, though, because obviously, you know, it was through my work. So a lot of people got their heads shaved. So it wasn't just me. So there was, you know, strength in numbers. However, I've had my head shaved before, like I've talked about. And I, you know, like, it's not one of those things where, like, when I shave my head, I'm like, oh my God, I like having a head shaved head, because I think I'd look pretty good with a head. Wow. With a shaved head. I'm talking too fast, I think. I think that's the problem. Probably all the coffee I had today, like, no joke. I mean, like, on top of all the food I've just told you I've been eating, I probably had like 7 or 8 cups of coffee. Elf from Melmac can attest to that because he was over here for the party. So when I went into work, it was really refreshing, like, having, you know, like, of course, there's always the nerves because it's like a lot of these people haven't seen me with my head shaved. And you just like, and also, like, I really don't like being the center of attention, says the guy who has a podcast where he just talks basically just to hear himself talk for an hour. But going in the next day and hearing, you know, like, people, like, what I heard from a lot of people, which was really weird, was, oh yeah, you have a nice head. And it's like, okay, do I have a nice head? Because I was like, I guess I don't have, like, you know, I have a pretty good hairline, I guess, and like a pretty nice rounded head. So it was really nice, like, hearing people just like, wow, like, you have a really good head. And I'm like, I have a good head? Oh my God, that's crazy, because I give really good hugs. And it was just like weird, the reactions I was getting, like when I would tell people I give really good hugs, because they're just like, the hell? Like, I don't know what kind of response they were looking for after they told me I had like a really good head. I mean, like, I don't know if, oh, I'm thinking like maybe they wanted me to be like, well, I give really good handshakes. So I don't know, either way. But yeah, St. Baldrick's was a good, big success. Great time. Parks Rec tournament results. I talked about that last week. Told you guys to get in there and vote. By the time the episode came out, I think the tournament was over, or there was like one round left. So the bracket was just best Parks and Rec character that wasn't one of the 11, if you include Mark Brendanowicz, which I do, because he was in the opening credits for the first two seasons. So I definitely consider him main cast. Anyway, none of those 11, and John Ralphio won. Ben Schwartz, of course. I knew he was going to win. I should have actually just predicted it on here. I did on, I recorded again, another teaser. That first episode hasn't come out that I did with Parks Pals yet. I think it comes out maybe this week, maybe when you're hearing this episode. So I'll post that on the Instagram though. But yeah, I recorded again with the other podcast, Parks Pals, with my new friend Holly. It's great chatting with her over there. But I did say on her show, I was like, yeah, I bet John Ralphio wins. However, that one probably won't be out for a few weeks. I don't know, because they're way ahead with the recording. So anyway, the tournament that is going on right now, I don't know how many I'm going to do. Probably just when the tournament ends, I guess, the real March Madness tournament. But right now I am doing, I just put like the best thing about Pawnee. And now there's many things. I mean, like, you could, tons of different things about Pawnee, but I just kind of picked some of the specific quirks about Pawnee, like obviously the citizens of Pawnee, because that's such a big part. And then other things like how they drink out of water fountains, you know, when they put their whole mouth around, their hatred for libraries, their hatred for salads, their hatred for Eagleton. So hopefully you guys check the Instagram, you know, like I said, if you're not following the Parks Rec memes one. It's a lot more fun than the Citizens of Pawnee, but Citizens of Pawnee is, you know, where you get the show information. So make sure you're following both of those Instagrams. Okay. We're going to do filler real quick.
Everything he's saying is nonsense, and he's fooling them.
Okay, so I watched a sequel this this week. There's kind of a little caveat with this, like the reason why I watched this movie. So I told you guys a couple weeks ago, and now some of you might not even care, whatever, but my buddy Sasha, who I talked about before, with the St. Baldrick's thing, also at Flips and Bumps, you know, the two of us have been talking that we want to do a podcast together. So he said, though, he's like, you know what, though? I'm not going to do a podcast with you until you watch Titanic 2. Titanic 2. So Titanic 2 is not a sequel to Titanic 1, the billion-dollar movie, what, number 3, I think, all time, or number, it's in the top 5, I believe. And I was, so when I tell them, I'm like, all right, I'll check this out. So I found it. I had this, it was one of those things I had to do like a 7-day free trial just so I could watch the thing, and I'll just cancel it right after. But The Asylum, that's the name of the production company who made this movie. Now, I'll just tell you right now, Sharknado, they made those movies. So you're just like, wow, what's The Asylum? Well, they made all, I think there's 10. I think that maybe there's 10. There might be 10 Sharknado movies. And they've made a bunch of other things. Like, what they're very famous for is, like, making kind of, like, they call them mockbusters. So they're fake, you know, I wrote down a couple of the names. Like, they, for instance, like, Transformers, they have Transmorphers. Where are these other ones? Wow, this is really embarrassing. Snakes on a Train, you know, for Snakes on a Plane. Sunday School Musical instead of High School Musical. And then this is my favorite one, Meth Gator, as opposed to Cocaine Bear. But anyway, so they've been like sued. They've been taken to court a lot of times, like for just like deliberately like ripping off some names too. There was like the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. There was like The Day the Earth Stopped Moving. So I think like Fox Pictures got pissed off. Was like, enough. But anyway, all right. So Titanic 2 is nothing, like I said, has nothing to really do with it's essentially the Poseidon Adventure. That's what this movie is. Just Google that if you don't. It's just a boat disaster movie. That's all it is, which is what Titanic is, don't get me wrong. But this is, all right, so in this movie they have created the Titanic 2. This is supposed to be its predecessor, and this is like, on the outside it's like, ooh, it looks kind of like rickety and that, but it's like, no, that's just the aesthetic. Inside we've got some badass fucking boats and stuff. But you find out early on from this woman who gets on the damn boat, she talks to her dad and he's like, honey, it didn't pass inspection. Or it's like, it was like 80%, something like that. She gets on the fucking boat. Like, I get that's her job or whatever. She's like I don't know, like a stewardess, but I don't know what you call it for like a yacht or like a cruiser or the Titanic. But anyway, so the plot of the movie is essentially, it's just, there's a huge... like a tsunami. No, I guess not a tsunami, but like a huge tidal wave, because I mean, like, in relation to the first one, yes, there are like glaciers and huge icebergs that are busting off. This is becoming a problem. But it's just stupid that it's like, I mean, I guess you had to make it like Titanic, so you had to use the icebergs, but it's like, why do these people have to try? I guess they're trying to do like the reverse trip of the original Titanic. And it's like, in the beginning of the movie, there's this dude fucking surfing, and like he pulls up to this glacier and just stops, and then all of a sudden the glacier starts falling apart, and later you find out that it's like, oh, a chunk the size of Staten Island or something, and it's like, bullshit, that's like the size of my backyard. But anyway, this like this chunk breaks off, and this dude surfing's like, yeah, because he like catches a fucking tasty wave as this is coming by. So it's like kind of cool. It's like, yeah, that was dope. I mean, just like how he got to use the wave. But as far as like the cast goes, you have Bruce Davison. He's like, well, Bruce Davison, and then I guess Brooke Burns, I think, was married to Bruce Willis at one point, or is married to him. I don't know. She did some reality shows, and honestly, I don't know much. She's acted a little bit. She's been in stuff, obviously. But Bruce Davison, he's a little more accomplished. Actually, he's a pretty accomplished actor. He's been in like the X-Men movies and stuff like that. Just look him up. You'd know him. So It's funny to me, like, when you call this Titanic 2 and it looks like a TV show versus its, you know, predecessor that was like, again, a $1 billion movie. I like how when this is, I just wrote down a bunch of notes, so I don't really have a review for this, but this is, and again, I apologize to anyone that's like, this is stupid. I don't care. I put the timestamps in there so you can skip at any time, but here we go. There's like, so 14 minutes into the movie, the boat actually takes off, and it's like, it's a cool epic shot. I mean, like, you've got like a nice sunset in the background, there's the Statue of Liberty, but then they just show like a dude on a jet ski, like, shit. So it just like totally takes away from like the awesomeness of like, yeah, the Titanic's taking off, because it's like they immediately just kill the mood by having this dipshit like whipping around in a jet ski. Another thing with like just like the terrible, well, the green screen in this movie is awful, and it's another one of those situations where they're like in the Arctic. Well, actually, they're still in the, I don't know what the hell they are in this movie, but like there's no breath, you know, you can't see the breath because they're not actually, and you know, and then they go into a tent and it's like, well, it's probably still like 20 degrees in here, but you can't see their breath. The acting is so bad that it's one of those things where like when they talk to each other, the other one, it's like, how are you today? I'm good. How are you? Good. I'm good too. So you don't know if it's like the editing, like if they just told them literally, it's like, just say one line at a time and we'll put it together. But I mean, it's like everyone thinks about their answers for like a good 2 to 3 seconds before they'll just be like, I'm good. Thanks. Woo. What do we got? Oh, like, yeah, like, so when they find out they're about to like, or they're getting close to these glaciers, they tell everyone, like, as a safety precaution, they tell everyone, please use the elevators. They're telling people to use the elevators in a safety precaution. I noticed that they use the same submarine shot twice at one point. They just they show it one time and then again, hey, there's that guy again. There's an announcement over the PA, this is not a drill. Everyone grab your life vest. That's it. There's no other instruction other than that, just telling everyone to grab their life vest. And this is like the slowest stampede ever. It's so funny because everyone's like, ah, like they're all running around and stuff, but there's not that many people on this boat because like, obviously you would have to pay for the extras. So there's probably like, I don't know, that we've seen maybe 100 people on this boat that is the Titanic too. So it's like the same size, but it's so funny. It's like no one's ever in danger, at least as far as like when they're like, oh, like trying to make it seem like it's a stampede, because you'll see like two people come running up the stairs and then like another guy and then like another four. But it's like there's like people falling over, but they're not getting trampled because there's plenty of room for them to just get back up and run. Oh my god. And like no one's braced for impact either, like when they you know, like in the movie it's like iceberg right ahead in Titanic 1, and this one it's just like it's like grab your life, boom, and they just fucking hit the thing. It's so funny. And I, like one of the big things with the other Titanic, you know, it's like, oh, women and children first for the lifeboats. And this one, the captain's like, he's like tells the guy under him, he's like, make sure everyone boards the lifeboats. And the guy's like, women and children first. And he's like, yeah. You know, it's just like, did you have to ask that question? And again, it's just like, we got plenty of room because there's not that many people on here. This is definitely, well, then again, I guess the Sharknado movies were all like pretty much sci-fi. So that's pretty much like the level of, you know, effects and stuff we got here. I love that you get your token. Captain, you need to see this line. What else? Okay. Oh, when one of the ladies gets hurt and Brooke Burns' character, like they're I don't know if they're trying to make her seem like mega smart here, or like, oh, wow. She's thinking outside of the box here. She asks the other guy, give me a credit card. Or she tells him, give me a credit card. And she just uses the credit card, like, and it's like a cut on her shoulder. So she basically uses the credit card to put it flat on there and then wrap tape around there. Maybe this is what they tell you to do. I've never heard of anyone doing this. It's like, you could find anything. I don't know, a credit card. But it's like on the shoulder. It doesn't contour to the body, like, at all. So it's just like, they make this big, like, the guy, it takes them like a minute. Everything in this movie takes so long, too. Like, when they show, well, actually, I'll get to a part, but, Yeah, like when the boat's going down and it's like showing the people in the ocean, you know, the ones that have at least like made it to safety, kind of, you can like see the bottom of the pool that they're in. It's just so much brighter underneath. It's like, why is there all this light coming up from under? These gigantic waves are taking down airplanes. It's, you know, it's like another thing, like with the helicopter that the guy's in, it's just like, fucking go higher, dude. Why are you like trying to skim this thing? Like he's trying to ride the waves. Just the amount of times in this you hear, there's another wave coming. There's another wave. So again, like none of this has to do with the Titanic. It's just, it's called Titanic too because it's in a boat, Titanic, that's being just like devastated by waves. Oh yeah, this is probably the biggest dilemma in the movie. Forget like that the boat is shrinking, that the boat is sinking. There's this one point where they have to like walk through a hallway, but there's a shock wire, as Andy Dwyer calls it. But it's like on the ground, you know, and they have to get across it. So it's like, we're going to have to climb over it. What, I mean, like they literally could have just stepped over this thing, but there, it's like a 15-foot climb that there's like a pole above head, and they're just like, this thing would have busted, by the way, with all the weight that was on it. But it has to show you each, or the, just, it's two people, but like it shows you the guy goes, and then the girl, I can't make it, she's halfway. So then the guy climbs back and he like grabs her arm and gets her back. But I mean, like, we're talking, this is like 5 minutes of them climbing across this. I mean, like, that doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. It, anytime you have to watch something for that long. So, oh my God. Oh, the main guy, his name's Hayden. He's like at first he's like the bad guy because he like made the Titanic, and it's like, no, we haven't passed inspection. But we're gonna, but like by the end of it, he's like the bad guy with the heart of gold. Cause remember in the first one, they tell the one guy, it's like, no, women and children first. And he like tries to sneak on, and the one guy sees him do it, and he's like, oh, you're a piece of shit. So it's like kind of like that where they're like, oh no, sir, you have to get on. And he's like, no, women and children first. And he's like looking around and seeing like the dozens of people on the entire boat that are hurt. You know, again, like, where is everyone? It's fucking Titanic. So he ends up staying, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. I'm not joking. When this movie picks up, like when the action starts, it somehow gets more boring. Like this movie gets worse when it gets more exciting. So yeah, take what you want with this. Oh my God. So back to these two characters, like with the shock wire, they've got this like long thing where it's just the two of them, like for that, you're following them. And it's like, he's like, they basically come down to where it's like, one of us is going to die. Like we only have one life, or we only have one scuba tank with the mask. And it's like, I can't leave you behind. Like one of those, but like me as the viewer is like, I don't give a shit which one of these two dies. I don't care if they both die. I just want this movie to end so I can at least just be like, okay, I watched Titanic too. So the idea they come up with, and this is great. He's like, you're going to have to take you're going to have to wear the mask. And she's like, well, what about you? And he's like, well, I'll just have to drown. And she's like, but you'll die. And he's like, well, hopefully they can revive me in time. And like, that, he's definitely being like selfless. And she's just kind of like, okay. It's like, all right, you know, you've got about 2 to 3 minutes, maybe tops, if this guy can hold his breath. I mean, like I've heard, you know, some people can hold their breath for like 8 minutes, which is ungodly. I can hold my breath for like 8 seconds. But so the guy, it's like, okay, so she puts on the mask and he goes and she gets saved. Like her dad comes down, whatever. And this dude's been underwater for, I don't know, 7-8 minutes. Like the time's elapsed. I mean, we haven't seen it for this whole time, but I mean, like you're guessing how long it took them to get him out. So then it's like, I'm thinking in my head, it's like, there's no way this guy can be alive. There's no way he's been under there. Like, he's been under there for too long. He's got to be dead. But they pull him out, of course. So then the one lady, she starts giving him CPR. Come on, come on. He's still dead. Come on. Gives him a little more CPR. It's getting really dramatic. She's giving him CPR. Ah, he's still dead. But then he wakes up. He revives. No, I'm just fucking kidding. He was dead the entire time. Like I called. Yeah, I mean, like, he just looked like dead meat. This movie's also dead too, because that's literally where the movie ends. It's like you find out this guy's dead, and then it's like, ah, crap. But you know, the girl's fine. But they don't show you, like, they're talking about how these waves can like end the world. But they don't show you any of the, like, the what happens to the rest of the planet. They only show you what happens to the Titanic 2 during this massive storm. So, like I said, it's like the Poseidon Adventure. And it's, oh, God. Sasha, I don't know, man. There's certain films where it's just like, man, that was fun to watch. This one was not fun to watch. This movie sucks. It's so bad. And, but yeah, it was, I guess, fun to review. I mean, that was more fun picking on it. But yeah, there was a sequel, actually, that came out after this one that was called Titanic 666 that came out 2 years ago, actually. And this movie actually was made with a budget of $500,000, which probably all went to Bruce Davison, the actor guy. So anyway, there you go, Sash. I'm going to talk about Parks and Rec now. Season 4, Episode 10, Citizen Nope. Strangely enough, this is also the second episode in a row that has the word nope in the title. And actually, this is stupid. This is just a little tangent I'm going off on. But this is, it kind of had me thinking about all the different cast members and how many times their names are in different episodes. And so I went through the main cast. Leslie's name, Leslie or Nope, is in 8 episodes. Ron's name is in 6 episodes. April and Anne have 3 each. Jerry and Ben have 2. Chris, Donna, Tom have 1. And then the variations of Tammy 1, the Tammys are in 3. And this is all counted from the entire episode list on IMDb. Anyway, this episode, directed by Randall Einhorn, written by Dave King. Dave King plays Kurt Lerpus. He's part of the dynastic Lerpus family. He's the rabbi at John Ralphio's fake funeral in season 7. And then also in season 5, he's the handler for the fake Lil Sebastian. So obviously he's playing two characters. Or maybe the guy just, moonlights as a Lil Sebastian handler when he's not rabbi-ing. All right. Our cold open. We start off with Leslie in the Parks office. This is either before or after work. I'm guessing it's before just based on like what Chris is wearing because Chris is jogging. But either way, she's in the office and all the lights are off. She's like sneaking around because remember from last week's episode, she got suspended for 2 weeks. Chris just so happens to be in the office and he introduces us to Bumbleflex, which is the synthetic material made out of bees wings that make up his entire shirt. It's a mouthful right there. So yeah, we'll see this a couple more times. I think more so this season with the Bumbleflex. Yeah, it just looks almost like Under Armour, like a type shirt, but it has like a hexagonal print on it. So it gives the impression that it's like, oh, there's a, but either way, it's made from synthetic bees wings. Like, good Lord. All right. So he quickly points out that Leslie is suspended and she's not supposed to be there. So she quickly grabs the thumb drive that she brought and runs off as Chris tails her. Really funny scene, though, because she's like, oh, yeah, I'm just downloading a couple things. And Chris is like, no, but, you know, he's basically like, no, you can't. You're not. First of all, you can't be here. And she's like, I'm just downloading a few things. Like, N-O. I love how he says that. But he tells her, he's like, give me the flash drive. And she gives him like Whiteout, I think it is instead, or Chapstick. And he's like, this is Chapstick. So he's like, give me the flash drive. And then she's like, give me the Chapstick. And it's like on 3. And they actually hand off like that. So then, but she grabs it out of his hand and runs off. So he runs after. All right. So now we're over at JJ's diner where Leslie and Ben are having breakfast. They talk about what's next for Ben as he resigned in disgrace. These are his words, actually. On last week's episode, Leslie also invents a new spice called Salger, which is salt and sugar. I don't know why I had to add that because it doesn't really matter. Ben does have an interview at an accounting firm, however, and then manages to say he resigned in disgrace 2 more times before Leslie tells him maybe you should stop saying that. Like, he's just, you know, Ben's like, you can tell he's like happy that he gets to be with Leslie and everything, but it's like, he's like kind of like fucked. It's like, shit, I don't have a job right now. He's got stuff lined up, but it's like anytime you have to, you know, what you're comfortable with, what you know to start over, it's just like, yeah. Kind of a pain in the ass. All right, so next we're in the Parks office, and this is a Christmas episode, apparently, since Anne has brought gifts from Leslie, since she can't be there, obviously. Andy's gift is a gold Mouse Rat album. So he's bragging because they sold 100 gold records. Obviously, in the real record industry, signify 1 million records sold, not 100. But anyway, it is awesome. It's a really cool one. And then you'll see later on in season four when Andy and April go to the doctor to, like, when they find out they have insurance and they can get a bunch of their ailments taken care of. Andy's actually hanging this on the wall, and he hits his head on the wall because he sneezes and has a concussion. But anyway, yeah, it's that same gold record he's putting up. Donna got a leopard print robe that says "You can get it" in rhinestones on the back. Tom got a pocket watch that opens up and says "Baller Time." April got a painting of herself as a medieval warrior having beheaded the Black Eyed Peas. All right. I may have talked about this. I'm pretty sure I've talked about this on here before. Here's a little Easter egg for you. This is kind of a cool one. I have no idea if this was intentional, but it's very odd to me that, and I think I may have written into Parks and Recollection, which is back, by the way. I can't remember if I said that recently, but anyway, so this episode was released, and I'm talking about Parks and Rec. This episode was released December 8th, 2011. So also on NBC that same night, there's another show, kind of a smaller one, but you guys may have heard of it, called The Office. They aired their episode on the same night, their Christmas episode also, and both shows, it was episode number 10, okay? Again, same exact night. However, for The Office, this was season 8 versus Parks and Rec season 4. Obviously, Parks and Rec started a little different. Anyway, so Robert California, played by James Spader, also had a line where he took a jab at the Black Eyed Peas in that episode, saying,
"I am so tired of the Black Eyed Peas. It's rock and roll for people who don't like rock and roll. It's rap for people who don't like rap. It's pop for people who don't like pop."
And now I'm just going to play April's real quick.
"These are the Black Eyed Peas. And I finally killed them. It's a Christmas miracle."
So isn't that, like, crazy? I mean, like, clearly... Maybe not clearly, but I think this had to have been as a joke, because I mean, like, it's, I don't know, wasn't, like, Will I Am, like, what, like, from the Black Eyed Peas, wasn't he on, like, The Voice or something? Is that NBC? Maybe it was just, like, an inside joke, like, for the Black Eyed Peas, like, because it just seems like a big diss, like, for The Office and Parks and Rec, who are written by a lot of the same people, or who have at least had a lot of the same production staff. So I don't know, I just thought it was hysterical, and that's, it's crazy that. But yeah, both shows did it on the same night. So, all right. And then back to the gifts. She got Ron a remote control for his doors that will close both of them on command. He's bummed though, because all he did was, or he was just going to give Leslie a $20 bill for her Christmas present, which is what he gives everyone, a crisp $20 bill. However, yeah, he's just bummed out because he's like, shit, like Leslie just does so much. And the gift it's just because Ron has the door for that feeds into the Parks office, but then he also has the door on the other side, so people, like, from the hallway can come out in there. So it's awesome. This remote closes both doors, and you'll see some pretty funny jokes, like, down the line. There's an episode coming up where Chris, like, he's like, "Ron, I got to talk to you." And Ron, like, hits the button, but it's too late. And Chris gets in, like, right before it closes. Very funny. So anyway. All right. So it's a little unusual that Ron, of all people, though, is the one who suggests that they do something nice for Leslie this year. Then we see one last gift Leslie bought, socks for Jerry. So, yeah, like I said, it's kind of cool that Ron's the one that's like, you know what? She always does cool shit for us, so we got to do cool shit for her. All right, so next we're with Leslie and her campaign advisors, Elizabeth and William, who tell Leslie to lay low until they can see how the scandal has affected Leslie's polling. Like, I love Leslie's confidence, but it's also like she's very cocky for someone who just lied to her advisors about a scandal and is also suspended for 2 weeks. Because, like, when they tell her, there's a scene coming up. But anyway, yeah, they tell her to kind of take it easy. And, like, Leslie makes a face almost like you would expect her to make. That's, you know, whenever they're just like, okay, you can kind of lay low for the next couple weeks. And so, yeah, it's just kind of like cocky of her to think that he's being crazy by telling her, like, dude, you know, like, this was a big deal. Like, you just lied to a lot of people about the scandal and yada, yada, yada. So take it easy. All right, so now we're over at Tilden and Radomski, which is the accounting firm that Ben's interviewing at. So we see Barney Varm again for the first time since season 2, the episode Leslie's House. Barney is a very popular character, at least when I've done the polls. He actually won when I did two of them. Because I said, I did this one most recently that started off with 32. Barney did pretty well, actually. I think he got to the second or third round. But when I did the original, like the first one I did was best side character, and John Ralphio won that. And then like a few, like a month or two later, I did it again with best side characters, and I just picked 16 more that weren't on the first list, and he won that second one. So he is a popular character. But yeah, Barney is the very, hey, Ben, how are you? And he's in love with Ben at the accounting firm. So it's funny because, like, I highly doubt in season two that they had plans to bring him back, but he will be in a handful of episodes moving forward. And like I said, he loves Ben Wyatt. He's number one fan. So anyway, he says that Ben's resume looks great, and then he sets up a meeting with Ted. I have to say it that way because anytime Barney mentions Ted, who's like the other partner, I guess, at the firm. We never meet Ted, though, which is funny, and it's a great joke. It's kind of like Mayor Gunderson, who we meet in the very last episode. But yeah, we never meet Ted. It's awesome. All right, so this is also the start of Ben's accounting puns, which Barney loves. Here he says, okay, well, calculator, as he's leaving, and like, but it takes Barney a second, but then he just starts dying. And that's when he's like, Ted, he calls him again. He's just like, say it to Ted when he comes in. But yeah, we still never meet Ted. All right, so back over to the Parks office, the gang tries to use a word cloud with all of Leslie's favorite things. Some of the words on here: baby koala, Ben, Hogwarts, Oprah, Biden, among many others. Anne also is written very big. A little Easter egg, speaking of The Office, which I just talked about. It's kind of funny. The Office is written on here, and it's like in the font that they use for the show The Office. So I thought that was kind of cool. Ron's idea is to use the words work, office, and cute, because he thinks that she uses those ones the most. And he wants to have the team make a model of the Parks office that they'll all decorate. But then Anne one-ups Ron and suggests a candy model office, which even April agrees with. So there's actually a couple scenes in this episode where April agrees with Anne, which is kind of weird. Now we're over at Ben's house, where he and Leslie discuss the accounting firm and how he was offered the job, but still isn't sure if he wants it. So Leslie tells him to just take a month or so off and find something he actually likes. He then tells Leslie that since she can't work, she can just lobby as a citizen. She loves the idea. Then Ben looks up and says, to no one, I can hear you breathing. Yes, you can have some spaghetti. Then the closet doors shoot open, the ones behind Ben, as both April and Annie come rushing out to eat Leslie's food. I am so curious, like, how long these two have been inside the closet waiting and how often they do this. Like, yeah, so if I read that fast, it's just, yeah, Leslie and Ben having a regular dinner. And then when Leslie gets up and walks away, Ben, he doesn't turn around or anything, but there's a closet behind him, and he's like, I know you're in there, I can hear you breathing, you can have the food. So they were clearly just waiting for Leslie and Ben to finish. But like, I don't know, are they like scavengers? Like, were they expecting Ben and Leslie to just leave their plates? Because if they picked them up and like walked to the kitchen with them, it seems like April and Andy were kind of sitting there for no reason. But yeah, it's so funny to me just like how childish they are. Like, they can't even cook for themselves. It's unreal. All right, over to the community center. Leslie starts her meeting. It's a small group, but they're excited. The group is called the Parks Committee of Pawnee. Parks Committee of Pawnee, or PCP, as you guessed. I'll be honest here, like, this just kind of like side thought. I think this is like really shitty of Leslie to start this group. She was in the wrong with the scandal, and last week there was this big revelation where Ron gave Leslie advice about learning from your mistakes and growing. She's definitely not growing here. This is more like her just like stirring shit up because she's got 2 weeks to kill. Like, she kind of says that, like, well, you know, I got it. But it's like, so this group PCP, which it's funny, but it's also just like, come on, like, she would have a little more sense there. She does make a funny, like, the reason why it's called PCP later. But either way, yeah, I just don't like that she kind of admitted she was wrong in the last episode, and then now it's just like, oh, I can't do anything for 2 weeks, and it's like, we'll just start, you know, then just go ahead and lobby. So she just like turns into a pain in the ass and just starts like demanding all this stuff, and it's like, what happens after this 2 weeks? You just like abandon these people, obviously, like, because we never see this group again. So I don't know. It just seems to me like, yeah, like, everyone was cool and Ben resigned in disgrace for you, but you're still trying. Like, that's still not good enough. You can't just like sit back and take the punishment that is clearly your fault. So anyway. All right, so the rest of the park's crew shows what they've made for the model so far. Andy made a rock and roll candy Andy, which is just like a candy guy, like it's like marshmallows. He's got a guitar. April made a marshmallow Ron Swanson, which is awesome. He's just got his arms crossed. Tom did absolutely nothing as usual, and he just bought a chunk of fudge that he asks no one to eat because it costs $55 an ounce. This thing like had to have been like at least a pound. So I'm guessing Tom spent like many hundreds of dollars on this, but that's what's funny. He's like, please don't eat it because it's $55 an ounce. Is the plan to return it? Like, I don't think you can return fudge. Maybe, I mean, Tom finds a way to return everything because he just cries, as we found out. He literally does that when he said, because no one likes to hear a grown man cry. Donna made a silver M&M's covered desk, which they have to tell Andy to go throw up because he has already eaten a bunch of them. And he looks like actually one of the war boys in Mad Max Fury Road after they've been chroming, you know, awesome movie. But yeah, when they do the, when they spray that shit in their mouth, that's kind of what Andy looks like now because he's eating these. And yeah, so it's funny because right after Donna shows that, you know, someone's like, oh, do they make silver M&M? She's like, no, but I had to spray paint it. And Anne immediately says, nobody eat that because they're toxic. And you look over at Andy and you can just see the silver paint like around his mouth. And she's just like, go throw up. And he's like, well, I'm gonna. And then April says it with her the next time, like, go throw up. They both said it. So it's another time she agrees with Andy, or with Anne. Next up is interview number two for Ben, and it's with another character we've already met. This one's just like so out of left field, but it's with Dennis Feinstein, of course, played by the hilarious Jason Mantzoukas, who, if you'll recall, has his own company, Scents by Feinstein. So Dennis Feinstein is the cologne mogul or the perfume mogul, whatever, for Pawnee. He's actually named Dante Fierro, which is a cool name, but Dennis Feinstein was way more exotic and punny. But again, Jason Mantzoukas, who's just, he's in like everything now. He's like even the Dunkin' Donuts spokes guy, or he was for a little guy for a little bit. He's also in the show Invincible right now. He's Rexplosion. Such an awesome name. Explode is an awesome word. Explosion. Just sounds awesome. All right. So the weird thing about this interview, though, is that the CFO spot is possibly on the line because Feinstein says his current CFO, a man named Eddie, who's also in the room, mind you, may be getting fired. So I thought like Ben was just looking for like an accounting job at first, but then you find out that this one, he could possibly go on to be the CFO for Scents by Feinstein. But then Ben's just like, no, he's like, do not fire Eddie. And then he just like kind of realizes, he's like, I don't fucking want to work for this dude. And he tells Dennis Feinstein, I appreciate it, man, but you, like, keep your guy. I don't want to work here. Then we go over to a town forum. Woohoo! So first off, Chance Frenlum, she's the one that's always chanting. Again, his name's Chance. He gets us going by, your daughter is an idiot. Your daughter is an idiot. Who to a woman who just suggested that her daughter's favorite game is Chutes and Ladders and that they should have it at the rec center. Real important meeting, by the way. But yeah, he's saying that her daughter's an idiot because her favorite game is Chutes and Ladders because there's no skill. It's all luck because you just spin the dice, you know? So, but yeah, like I said, it's like, oh, what a great meeting. What board game should we have at the rec center? But that's not all. The PCP is in attendance. They already have shirts made, by the way. So you know how this show is. When someone comes up with something new, they have t-shirts, they have hats, they have everything, and they just miraculously appear out of thin air. So they must have gone to Tom's guy who gets stuff done incredibly fast. And the shirts say PCP makes it fun. Yeah. I don't know. I've never tried PCP. Leslie, of course, is running the group. And I love that her group claps for her until she makes a fist telling them to stop. So when she stands up, yeah, it's like literally like, it's great. She makes the fist and they're just like, yeah, they all stop clapping. She lists off a bunch of demands and says that they're going to take this all the way to the top. Outside, we see the group size has doubled. And Leslie mentions that she wants to take this all the way to Chris Traeger. So I don't know, maybe this is kind of like revenge for Chris, you know, doing his job. But again, even I said last week, it seemed like he went like a little hard on, you know, like he was trying harder to get them in trouble. But so maybe this is her kind of getting back at him. But again, totally just like contradicts everything from last week where it's like, dude, kind of learn and grow from it. So whatever. Back at the office, Ron struggles to put gingerbread houses together, so Andy kind of shows him how to do it. This is just like a quick scene. Now, I can say from personal experience, and I know I'm not the only one that's put a gingerbread house together, it is tough. Like, the stuff that the materials they give you, and by the way, don't eat your gingerbread house. Do not eat. Like, if you buy the gingerbread house and it's like, ooh, that stuff looks good, it's gross. Like, I haven't eaten the gingerbread house, but I mean, like, just looking at this shit, it's so gross. So if you're ever doing this, like, with your nieces, your nephews, your kids, whatever, your husband, your wife, what, use real glue. Just don't even waste your time with the icing they give you. Just use regular, like, Elmer's glue. It's so much easier. And again, you're not going to eat the damn thing, so no one will know if it's, you know. But yeah, so I felt, I kind of felt Ron's pain there when he was trying to put it together and they just kept falling off. Because you just have to kind of, like, do that thing where you put it together and then you're holding your hands outside of it, but you're not touching it. You know, you're just, like, waiting for it to fall. And then it just, like, you kind of maybe give it a little, either way, you know what I'm talking about. So then actually, yeah, Leslie does go over to Ron's office and she kind of starts talking shit. And she says that the PCP is coming and to prepare for war. And then she also gives him a Christmas present, though. So I kind of like that. Like, they show you, which is nice, like that, because Chris and Leslie have been beefing for these two episodes. I like that they're just going to tell you right away. It's like, no, we're not going to really make this a thing beyond these episodes. Don't worry about it. So Leslie and Chris are still cool with each other. Again, she bought him a pedometer, which is awesome. So he can track, like, his... Well, actually, it's something so he can, like, track his heart rate and everything, which I love. She's like, oh, you can connect it to the internet and do all your vitals. And it's like, all that shit's on our phones now. I just love it's like the difference in time here, because, like, this device for Chris was probably, like, super cool then. But, like, now, like, everyone's like, yeah, I got this shit on my phone and, like, way more. So, all right. Now we get a nice humbling moment for Leslie. We find out from her advisors that she's polling at 1% and that they've decided to focus on a different potential candidate, and that's it. So right now she has no campaign manager. It's kind of funny though that she accuses them of having an affair, but Elizabeth says that she's gay, so I guess no affair. But yeah, it's just you, because like when you saw William and Elizabeth earlier, they kind of, you know, I mean, it's like they were kind of, they were in good spirits, but I mean, it was like, okay, we're just going to see how this, but I don't blame them. I mean, like, she goes on to win. So it's kind of like, F you guys, you know, like, you should have stayed with me, even though Ben's the one that, you know, Ben was the campaign manager. I mean, Leslie's the one who won, but he was a much better campaign manager. So it was just, it kind of sucks. Cause I mean, like, and she's also kind of feeling good in this episode with the PCP. So, but yeah, that's, so pretty much William and Elizabeth, her campaign advisors. We'll see them again, like, in the next episode, actually. I don't know if we see them beyond that, but yeah, so that is dead in the water right now. Not her running for city council, but just, like, her working with them. All right, so then we quickly, we go over to JJ's now, as Leslie says that no one in Pawnee will take over for her campaign. So she just, like, at this point, it's like, what the hell are we gonna do? All right, we're back at the accounting firm. We get yet another recurring guest as John Ralphio comes out of nowhere and jumps on Ben's back. So apparently John Ralphio's, and like it's his, I don't know, she does like waxing. I don't know what that person is called, so I'm just going to say a masseuse. So I apologize to anyone if that's not what they're called, but I don't know what the wax, a waxer? I don't know. So anyway, but John Ralphio's masseuse has an office in the same building as Tilton and Radomski, which is the accounting firm, and he's there getting a wax job. So I love that John Ralphio also, he's just like, hey, looks, he's like, hey, I heard somebody resigned in disgrace. So like, who else is it? Like, so it's funny to me that Tom probably actually told him, he's like, yeah, Ben resigned in disgrace. Like, probably saying it like an asshole, because Ben keeps, like, Ben keeps telling Leslie he resigned in disgrace, but he's doing it more like, like, almost like he's delirious. Like, eh, it's fine, though, because I resigned in disgrace. Like, oh, fuck, what am I going to do? But I love that John Ralphio, because John Ralphio hasn't talked to Ben. So someone else, or I don't know, or maybe John Ralphio just assumes, like, ah, he resigned in disgrace. It's so funny. It's somebody resigned in disgrace. I'm going to stop talking about this resigned in disgrace thing. So in a crazy, unexpected turn, though, John Ralphio kind of convinces Ben that this accounting job is going to suck, as Ben's now, his new title would be arguably the most boring in the office, which is he's going to be the accountant for an accounting firm. So it's just, it's great because you can totally see why Tom and John Ralphio are best friends here, because Ben is talking to John Ralphio and he does the thing where he's like, he starts falling asleep and he's like, oh my God, that sentence was so boring. I started falling asleep in the middle of it. And even Ben's like, yeah, I get it. Like, he knows. So, but then he tells Ben, if you're not doing something you love, don't do it. A quote from his masseuse. She told him this right before she ripped all the hair from his beehole. Whoosh! He's like, right before she ripped it from my beehole. Whoosh! Does the sound of the tear. I also love just in this scene, like how defensive Ben is around John Ralphio at first, like his body language, because I said John Ralphio came out of nowhere and he's just like, oh, you know, like probably like the like he always does, but he jumps on Ben's back and Ben's just like, what the fuck? But he turns around and he's like kind of got his arms up and he's just like in defense mode, but then he starts talking to John Ralphio. So later that day at City Hall, Chris and Leslie chat about her campaign managers leaving and how he doesn't say he's sorry, and I guess he doesn't need to. Now, I should say he doesn't say, because I remember last time I said someone didn't say sorry. They totally did, and I screwed that up. But anyway, he basically just says, I wish this ethics, you know, meeting didn't affect your poll. So he doesn't say, like, I'm sorry, but he does say, like, eh, I realize it affected it, and that kind of sucks. I wish it didn't. You know, so because he can't really apologize. He was doing his job. So she apologizes, though, for like the PCP overexcitement and says that she's starting a new group, the Leslie Sorry Division, LSD, of course. Then Chris gives Leslie her Christmas gift, which is her badge, as she's been reinstated. So this part, actually, I wasn't sure if it had been 2 weeks yet or if he was just letting her come back early. Because it seemed to me, if it was a Christmas present, yeah, that was, you know, nicely timed. But then he was just like, please come back to work. So I don't know if it was, if they gave her early access or if he did just to kind of like, all right, you know what? You're even worse when you're not working, even though you're suspended. So it's like, you can come back. So I'm kind of curious about that, if it was the full 2 weeks or if he just like, whatever. And so Leslie leaves Chris's office and Ben's waiting for her out in the hallway, tells her that he turned down the accounting job. He then leaves as she goes into the park's office saying she should go in alone. So he kind of like walks her over to there and she's like, oh, well, you should come in. We're having a Christmas party. And Ben's like, no, I think you should go on your own. And she's just like, oh, boy. So she knows something's going to happen in there. This reminded me a lot of season 5, the episode Leslie and Ben after they get married. Remember, Ron goes to jail because he punches out Jeremy Jam for Leslie. So then when Leslie, like, and her and Ben were supposed to get married that night, so she has no idea what's going on. She just knows that everyone was kind of waiting back at the park's office. So Leslie and Ron are walking down, and then all of a sudden he starts telling her, you know, like how much he appreciates her and everything. And she's like, what the hell's going on? And then she realizes, oh no, like right before they go into the park's office, that it's like something's going on in there. So yeah, I do like that. And I kind of forgot about this one, that she's just like, yeah, like she knows something's waiting for her in there, kind of like later on when she knows she's about to get married. So kind of cool. All right, where are we at? So when she goes in, the entire crew shows her the gift. It looks great, and the office looks wonderful, all lit up. So yeah, that, like, they put the Christmas lights around, and then like their mini gingerbread office looks pretty cool. And she's just like, oh my God, I love it, and I love you guys, and Anne specifically, but I love you guys, and I love it. It's just great. And Anne specifically, that's great. Ron is still sad though that he couldn't help with the gingerbread house. He made something else though, and the crew has something else to tell Leslie.
This is the city council chambers. And that's you, next May.
I don't understand. Your campaign advisors quit. Big deal. You're running for city council again, Leslie, with our help. April Ludgate, youth outreach and director of new media.
Tom Haverford, image consultant, swagger coach.
Ann Perkins, office manager and volunteer coordinator.
Andy Dwyer, security, suites, body man, javelin if need be.
Donna Meagle, transpo, a.k.a. rides in my Benz.
Well, you guys didn't tell me we were doing this. I did not know that I was supposed to come up with something.
Ron Swanson. Any other damn thing you might need.
So I just have to say that it's amazing. And obviously you couldn't see it because it was just a sound clip, but like they drop a sign down and it just says like, nope, 2012. And it's their awesome way of showing her that they're going to, you know, obviously that they're, well, what you just listened to. But the funny thing is that Jerry is kind of standing a little bit back. So he steps forward to kind of join the group, but that's when they pull the banner. So it drops down and he runs into it from behind. And it's like, it's not like it's, I mean, it's a regular rolled up banner, so it's not like he hits his face on it, but it's just hilarious that they of course drop it. And also when they're going around, you know, talking about it, I just love that he wasn't given an assignment. He's like, oh, I don't know what's happening here. Overwhelmed but happy, Leslie just says, let's go win an election, and the whole crew starts cheering. It's awesome. All right, so that's the episode. Then we just have the tag. All right, so this one is easily a top five tag. Now the tags aren't as good as the cold opens, but this one, it just in general, I mean, but this one is a top five. And this one shows John Ralphio. So he has somehow found out that Ben turned down the accounting firm job. So he somehow, well, by lying, obviously, he gets his job and he starts off his first day like this.
Welcome, Mr. Saperstein.
Thank you so much.
I will just show you to your cubicle.
I can't wait. I bet it's a big one, huh, Barney?
Temp agency said that you are fluent with QuickBooks Pro, correct?
Oh, right. Yeah, we should cover that. You see, my resume might not actually be accurate, right? So I have no idea what you're talking about. Don't know what QuickBooks are.
You don't have any accounting experience?
No, Barney, come on. But you don't have to be an accountant to know that this girl is a 10. Yo, what up, DS? You come here often?
To my job?
Ooh, she's got a mouth on her also. Shut it.
Is this the new temp who's supposed to help me with the spreadsheets?
I'm going to talk about spreading the sheets. We can go back to my place and I will rock your...
You're fired!
That makes sense. So I just go out the same way I came in?
Just an amazing scene. And going back to what I talked about before, how I said that Barney actually won the second when I did the best side character. John Ralphio won the first. Someone actually pointed out this scene and was like, oh, you should play this clip because it's the only time these two are in a scene together. And that's very true. So I actually did that. But yeah, you're going to, you either got, if you haven't watched the episode, you're going to have to go on YouTube or whatnot to find this scene because it is so awesome how it's shot. It is literally one take. It's like a little bit less than a minute, or well, I guess however long you just heard, but John Ralphio and Barney just come like walking in through a door and the camera guy is walking in front of them backwards. So it's like he's just tracking them. And then this guy just, he starts going in a backward circle as they're following him. And that's when John Ralphio starts getting really pervy. And he literally goes out the exact same door that he came in. He just does a circle, you know, like for 45 seconds or whatever it is, they walk together and then you're fired. He's like, yeah, that makes sense. I'll just walk right out this door. So just an amazing scene. On IMDb, this episode got an 8.4 to kind of just quickly go with my thoughts. That the tag app, actually, I think was probably the funniest part of the episode. Just a really good one. I noticed in this one, and it kind of bummed me, not bummed me out, but it just kind of had me like weirded out. Ben's demeanor is very like nervous and like defensive. Like I know he... It's hard to explain, but he's just like when he's talking to Leslie, like when they're at JJ's, he's like, yeah, I had a really good time as I resigned in disgrace. And it's like, you're with Leslie, dude. Like, why are you talking? And then, like I said, when John Ralphio like jumped on his back, like, yeah, that would be scary for anyone. But it's like, dude, you know, John Ralphio, like you don't have to be scared around him. Or maybe it's just, yeah, people are told to like be scared around John Ralphio. Who knows? But I don't know. Maybe it was just me. And Ben's my favorite character. So I was just kind of like, eh, I don't really like him that much in this, even though the episode. So it's like pretty much about him. April and Andy waiting in the closet was a great scene because again, it just kind of, it makes you think. It's like, how often do they do this? How long do they wait in there? And like, what are the stipulations for like what they'll wait for? You know, like in this one, it was the spaghetti, but I wonder if there's certain stuff where it's like, maybe they get in the closet and then Ben and Leslie sit down to eat and they're just like, ah, crap. I like, I don't want salmon tonight or whatever. Jerry running into the sign that and then not having any duty to volunteer for is great. Also with Jerry running into the sign, this reminded me of, and I think I talked about this recently, the People magazine when it was, no, I'm sorry, Entertainment Weekly. Great periodical. I don't wonder if they still actually produce that. But anyway, when Parks and Rec was going off the air, they had for like the final week, you know, the week the final was going to air, they were on the cover and in the top right corner was the barcode for the magazine and Jerry's face was behind it. And it was just brilliant. Like, it was so good. So that's kind of what this reminded me of, because it almost looks on that picture like he's running into the back of the barcode. So, and then like I said, the tag with John Ralphio and Barney is so good. So good. So good. So that's going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. Please like and follow on Instagram at citizensofpawneepodcast and at parksrecmemes. Next week, I'll be covering season 4, episode 11, The Comeback Kid. Thank you for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name's Brian, and I'll see you next Tuesday. April sends Tinnifer down to Miami in hopes that Dwayne Wade will throw a basketball at her head.